There's an article that keeps making the rounds on Facebook, among theater people especially. The headline is 10 Things Theaters Need to Do Right Now to Save Themselves. Thing number one, enough with the goddamn Shakespeare already. I don't agree, but it is worth asking why this one particular 450-year-old British playwright gets so much real estate in American theater. It's also worth asking, what other old plays should we watch if we weren't so devoted to Shakespeare? We sent Richard Paul to ask around.
You'd be forgiven for thinking there were no plays written between the year Shakespeare died, 1616, and the dawn of the 20th century. In fact, I'll bet you've never seen anything older than A Doll's House except for Shakespeare. It's as if the world went several hundred years with no plays. Of course, that isn't true. There was plenty to see. There were Shakespeare's best-known contemporaries, Christopher Marlowe and Ben Jonson, but there are lots of others.
High on my list would be Beaumont and Fletcher's Night of the Burning Pestle.
Michael Whitmore is director of the Folger Shakespeare Library. He likes this quirky little comedy with a postmodern feel about a grocer named Ralph.
Ralph, who goes to see a play and ends up getting involved in being a character in that play.
Come up, Ralph. I'll tell you, gentlemen. Let them but lend him a suit of apparel and necessaries, and by gad, if any of them all blow wind in the tail on him, I'll be hanged.
It's a really loopy play. It's kind of bonkers. And I think we would love it if we could see it today.
And there's Molière, whom you've only read if you took AP French.
I think we'd like most of the plays of Molière.
Howard Sherman ran the American Theater Wing, the people who put on the Tony Awards.
For Molière, I have a particular fondness for School for Wives.
I fall into deep gloom and melancholy when I survey the scene of human folly. Finding on every hand base flattery, self-interest, treachery.
Clearly, this play hasn't aged badly at all.
I recently saw a production of Tis Pity She's a Whore, which was striking and as up to the minute and shocking as one could ask for.
It's by a playwright named John Ford around 1630.
How you've changed in so short a time. You found an expert husband. Yes, that's it. One much cleverer in devising night games than two innocent children as we were.
There's a wonderful play by Susanna Centlivre called The Gaming Table, which is about a series of players in the way we would think of that term now. They're people who are kind of on the make, romantically, financially.
I may Sir James card double. Seven wins, five loses. You have lost it, madam.
Oh, again?
Female playwright doing terrific work, and it works.
So, considering all that, why don't we have the Oregon Centlivre Festival? Why aren't people lining up for Beaumont in the Park? One reason is the English Civil War, when the Puritans banned pretty much everything that people liked to do that was fun. The theaters were closed, plays were burned. Then came the Restoration. Theater was back, and boy, were they ready for fun.
There's a kind of hedonism in these plays.
That's Heather Nathans, the chair of the drama department at Tufts University. She says that characters in Restoration comedies are all...
I'm gonna drink it, smoke it, eat it, sleep with it, whatever, because I could be dead any time now.
Sir Jasper, your servant, where is the odious beast?
He's within in his chamber with my wife. She's playing the wag with him.
This is the best-known Restoration comedy, The Country Wife, from 1675. It's about...
a man who pretends to be impotent so that he can have fun with all of his neighbor's wives.
Nay, she has been too hard for me. Do what I could.
The guy's name is Horner. That's Horner, as in horn dog, as in horny. Yes, it meant the same thing back then. In this scene, Horner has just come out of the room where they keep the china, along with his neighbor's wife. Another wife is trying to drag him back in the room, saying that she wants some china, too.
Oh, Lord, I'll have some china, too, good Mr. Horner. Don't think to give other people china and me none. Come in with me, too.
Nay, madam, upon my honor, there is none left now.
Nay, I've heard you deny your china before now, but you shan't put me off, so come.
This lady has had the last there.
Yes, madam, to my certain knowledge, he has no more left.
Oh. The thing you realize here is that theater was not a particularly elevated form of entertainment.
These guys are actually writing much more like sitcom writers used to write. So they're churning out material and they are catering to popular taste and they're also catering to sort of in-jokes of the period. So it's not necessarily material that's going to be really clear to a contemporary audience.
Those old plays were pretty disposable. That started to change in the late 19th century, with Ibsen, Strindberg, and Chekhov, and later George Bernard Shaw, Eugene O'Neill, theater was catering to a more sophisticated taste. As for Shakespeare's time, Marlowe had his fans, so did Ben Jonson. Why did Shakespeare outlast them? It's actually because of a new technology that preserved his work.
As we're approaching the vault, we see something that looks like a bank vault door. In fact, that's exactly what it is.
Librarian Richard Kukta brought me down to this vault underneath the Folger Shakespeare Library. In here is a very precious artifact, actually 82 very precious artifacts.
What you can see is this wall of wonderful bindings in front of you. Is the Folger's collection of first folios.
The first folio is the first edition of the complete works of Shakespeare. Huge thing, more than 900 pages. Members of Shakespeare's company convinced a publisher to put it out 7 years after his death. It was a major financial risk. Ben Jonson came out with the complete works, but
it didn't do the same thing for him that the first folio did for Shakespeare.
Whether Jonson or Beaumont or Centrelever were as good as Shakespeare or not, it's actually beside the point. For 200 years after Shakespeare's death, you couldn't find most of their plays. If you wanted to put on a Ford play or a Fletcher play, you'd be hunting for a copy of the script in some old sheaf of papers. If you wanted Shakespeare, though, that was easy. Shakespeare was printed in a book.
If Shakespeare had been born 50 years before he was, he would have been, I think, a great professional dramatist. But his words wouldn't have gone so far. Once you put those plays into this revolutionary media format, which is the printed book, its ability to fling those words, ideas, and kind of passions associated with the plays is multiplied.
Now we have scholarly editions of Jonson and Marlowe and the rest, but it's hard to break the Shakespeare habit. After all, who really wants to?
I have immortal longings in me. Now, no more. The juice of Egypt's grape shall moist this lip.
For Studio 360, I'm Richard Paul.
Methinks I hear Anthony call. I see
him. Forget a ball.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players.
That's just what you are.
To thine own self be true.
He thinks the man does protest too much.
Neither a borrower nor a lender be.
You're unforgettable.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate.
Near me or far.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ear.
Like a song of love. That clings to me.
Parting is such sweet sorrow.
How thought of you does silly little things to me.
In Studio 360 over the years, we've done a lot of stories dealing with Shakespeare, and now, in honor of the big anniversary, they are gathered in an omnibus at studio360.org. Neil Gaiman on Shakespeare and his work, fake Shakespeare sonnets written by our listeners, one of the alleged other guys who actually wrote all of Shakespeare's plays, lots more. Check it out at studio360.org.
You're forgettable. In every way.